Welcome back. It is 22 until 5 o'clock on Downtown, a Friday afternoon show live at Seasons, Main Street in Bangor, our Quality Jewelers broadcast studio. Our next guest on Downtown has perhaps analyzed all of the Deflategate materials better than anybody not named Judge Richard Berman. Well, perhaps even better. He is a professor of criminal law and constitutional law at New York Law School. Professor Robert Blecker, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
It's quite an interesting story here because you entered into this as a guy who does not like the Patriots and somebody that I believe said you not only suspected when you read the Wells report that the Patriots cheated, but you hoped that they did.
Yeah, I hoped that they did and had been caught at it, and assumed that that was so because of the larger context, but and chided and made fun of some Patriots fans of how they could root for a cheating team. And then the more I read and the more I thought about it and the more I examined the evidence, the less persuasive it became, until eventually I reached the point where I believed and still believe, and increasingly so, that this thing never happened, that the league has in fact manufactured this case against the Patriots.
And you've said that you believe the NFL capitalized on false appearances, that the graphs and the statistics used by the league distorted actual circumstances. And there are a number of things that you cite, including the appearance on July 28th when Roger Goodell announced that Brady had destroyed the cell phone, but left out some fairly important information about Brady and the cell phone.
Well, Brady was never specifically asked to turn over the cell phone. He was asked to turn over the cell phone records, which he declined to do, and he was asked to turn over the texts. When he eventually agreed to do it, they were recoverable. All they had to do, other than past and present teammates, was to request them with Brady's permission, from 13 people, but they said it was undoable. If we take a step back, let's remember what the essential conclusion was of the Wells report. The essential conclusion of the Wells report was that science could not explain what had happened. And they presented it really in three statements. The first statement, which the public latched onto, was that all 11 Patriots balls were measured below the legal minimum on both gauges, while all four Colts balls were within the legal minimum. Above the legal minimum on at least one gauge. That was statement number one. So that the way the public interpreted it and the way the media played it up, all the Patriots balls were illegal, all the Colts balls were legal. It almost seemed to speak for itself. The second statement that they made, essentially, was that science and environmental conditions simply could not explain the drop in pressure in the Patriots balls from their pregame measurement to their halftime measurement. And the third statement that they made was, regardless of which gauge the referee used, it becomes critical if we talk about it in just a minute as to which gauge he used in terms of explaining the drop in pressure, but regardless of which gauge he used, you could not explain the fact that the Patriots' balls dropped more than the Colts' balls did unless you attributed human intervention. That is, somebody must have released some air. Otherwise, why would the Patriots' balls drop more than the Colts' balls? Those are the three statements, essentially, that they made. And each one of those statements is appropriately subject to attack and contradiction. Do we have a minute? Can I go into it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Statement number one, all 11 Patriots balls were measured at, remember, they were measured pregame. The ref measured the Patriots balls and the Colts balls to make sure that they were at the settings that were both legal and requested. The Patriots requested a setting of 12.5 PSI, pounds per square inch. The Colts requested a setting of 13.0, 12.5 or 13.0. The legal range is 12.5 to 13.5. So the Colts wanted all their balls set right at the middle of the legal range. The Patriots wanted the ball set at the lower end of the legal range. The ref used one of two gauges, both of which were his. They are called the logo gauge and the non-logo gauge, unfortunately, named after the fact that one of them has the Wilson W logo on the back and the other one didn't. They should be called the higher reading gauge and the lower reading gauge, or the long needle gauge and the short needle gauge. Okay, now, the ref, let's take all three statements. First statement, all 11 Patriots balls measured below the legal minimum at halftime. Well, of course they did. They were all set at the legal minimum before the the game. They were set in locker room conditions, which were both dry and warm, somewhere between 67 and 71 degrees, maybe even higher given the number of bodies that were there watching the NFC Championship game at the moment. And they were set in a dry environment. They were then moved to the field where they were played at 48 degrees, roughly 48, 49 degrees in the rain. So they were wet and they were cold. Now, if you take your car and you set your tire pressure at the minimum at night and then you leave it in the very cold environment, your gauge in the morning will tell you that you're below the minimum pressure. Of course it will. Science fully explains that. If you set it at the minimum in a warm, dry environment and you move it to a cold, wet environment in a sustained period of time, of course they were. If all 11 Patriots balls were not below the legal minimum at halftime, science couldn't explain that. Somebody must have inflated them. All right, so the first statement, then, is completely expected. It's artfully crafted, and it's thoroughly irrelevant. The second statement, science and environmental conditions could not explain the Patriots' drop from the pregame measurement to the halftime measurement. And that assumes that the ref measured it with the lower reading gauge, not the higher reading gauge. Now, it's funny because the Wells report credits all of the referee's memories. He was a very experienced referee, 19 years.
Walt Anderson. Was.
Right. Very experienced. He traveled around with two gauges. They were his gauges. They were inexpensive gauges that you could have purchased at any sporting goods shop, but they were his gauges. They credited all of his memories except one. The one memory that they discredited and said, well, he must have remembered it incorrectly, was which gauge he actually used to measure the balls. He remembered using the higher reading gauge. Now, let's remember the significance of this. If you want to know how much the pressure has dropped in a ball from one point of time to a later point of time, from pregame to halftime, you have to use the same device.
Right.
In measuring pregame as you do in halftime. Otherwise, you don't have any true measure. Look, if I want to lose weight, it's very easy. All I do is buy two scales, one of which is higher than the other. I weigh myself before I start my weight loss program on the higher scale. Then I say the magic words, and I weigh myself on the lower scale. And look at that. I've just dropped 4 pounds with no exercise and no diet. So, of course, you have to use the same gauge. He remembered using the higher reading gauge to measure the balls pregame. Yet the Wells report said he must have used the lower reading gauge. And it's based on some ridiculous logic. And here's the logic as to why the one memory that makes all the difference they discredit. Here was the logic used by the outside scientific investigators, the experts, the PhD statisticians and physicists. Their logic was this. The Colts set their balls at 13.0 on their gauge. When the refs measured the Colts' balls pregame, they measured about 13.0. Therefore, whatever device the ref used to measure the Colts' balls matches whatever device the Colts used, since they came up with the same measurement. The ref used the device to measure the Patriots' balls. They measured around 12.5. They were off by a little bit, a couple of them, but they were basically all around 12.5. The Patriots used their device to measure their balls and set them at 12.5. Therefore, whatever device the ref used should match the Patriots' device. Fine, that makes sense. The only problem is they then do this little bit of magic. They say, we tested 20 gauges, and what did we find? All of the gauges measured just what the non-logo gauge used. Measured. So therefore, we assume he used the non-logo gauge. Well, of course all 20 match the non-logo gauge. They bought 20 gauges of the same model as the non-logo gauge to measure them, and they didn't buy any gauges of the same model as the logo gauge. Not one. So of course they matched it. But what happened to the Colts' original gauge that was supposed to be the basis and the Patriots' original gauge? You only see one sentence in the Wells report. We couldn't find them. Why couldn't they find them? What happened to them? Where'd they go? What effort did they make to find them? We don't know. And any time the defense might try to find out, the answer was, that information is protected by lawyer-client privilege. The same outside investigators, Wells, Paul Weiss, is the law firm that was hired to represent the NFL. So the second statement, which is that science and environmental conditions could not explain the pressure drop in the Patriots' balls between pregame and halftime, is only true if you assume that he used a gauge that he remembers not using. Now, remember, they were his gauges, and he used the gauge 24 times because he measured all 12 Patriots balls, and he measured all 12 Colts balls. And then the real smoking gun with that, and then I'll move on to the third statement, the real smoking gun with that is if you look at the outside scientific investigator's report in the appendix, Appendix 1 of the Wells report, and you look at the diagram, in order to bolster the claim that the ref misremembered which gauge he used, they make the gauges appear to be very similar in appearance.
By essentially
doctoring
the photo. And they put
rulers underneath them.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
By essentially doctoring the photo, right? With
correct.
The placement of the ruler.
They take a ruler and they move it under the shorter needle, and nobody noticed it. I didn't notice it until the fourth time I read the report. And the reason that I read the report four times is statement number three, which I was looking for the support for, and this is what sort of dropped out. They say, regardless of which gauge the ref used, science cannot explain the fact that the Patriots' balls dropped more in pressure than the Colts' balls did when measured at halftime. But let's take a step back. Three things happened at halftime. Everybody agrees. The first thing that happened at halftime, under special orders of the NFL when it was suspected that the Patriots had deflated the balls, and two people were assigned to measure the balls, and two people were assigned to record and observe them. The first thing that happened was that all the Patriots' balls, all 11 Patriots' balls were measured. Everybody knows that's what happened first. So remember, these are 11 balls that have just been taken in from the cold, wet field. The Patriots dominated the first half in the AFC Championship game. In fact, they had the ball for the last 6 minutes and roughly 30 seconds of the second quarter. The only time the Colts had the ball was for 9 seconds when Andrew Luck took a kneel to end the first half. Therefore, the Colts' balls were all kept dry in a bag. The Patriots' balls were being used on the field in the cold, wet environment. The Patriots' balls were all measured first. Everyone agrees to that. And then the key question becomes, what happened next? Because two events happened. The Patriots' balls were reinflated. They measured low, as they would expect it to be. They were reinflated to 13.0, and four Colts' balls were measured. And only four. Now, why were only four Colts balls measured? Four Colts balls were measured because they were running out of time and the second half had to begin. And so they didn't have time to measure all 11. So the obvious sequence is that the Patriots balls were measured, found to be below the legal minimum. Then they were inflated into the legal minimum, beyond it at 13.0. Then they started measuring the Colts balls, and then they ran out of time. That's why they only measured four. But that's not the sequence that the outside investigators determined happened. What they said happened was, first the Patriots' balls were measured, then four Colts' balls were measured, but only four for some strange reason, then 11 balls were reinflated. It makes no sense, but here's the significance of it. In the natural sequence, in what almost certainly happened, where they, after measuring the Patriots' balls, they reinflated all 11 of them, that's taking between 4 and 7 minutes, closer to 7 minutes. All during that time, the Colts' balls are warming up. As they warm up, their pressure increases. Therefore, when they finally measure the four Colts' balls, the pressure of the Colts' balls is much higher than it was when it was first brought into the locker room at halftime. Therefore, their pressure dropped much less than the Patriots' pressure dropped. And one more thing, and one last thing, and then we can move to other implications of this whole mess. Something very strange happened. The two people who were measuring the balls accidentally switched gauges. They were using the ref's two gauges, and they never noticed that they switched gauges. Now, how do you know, nor did the observers notice it, that they had switched gauges? That is, the guy who used the first gauge, the logo gauge, to measure the Patriots' balls, use the non-logo gauge to measure the Colts' balls. Now, how do you not notice that you switch gauges unless you put them down to do something else? Then you pick them up to continue the measurement, and you didn't realize you picked up the wrong gauge. What did they put them down to do? obviously inflate the Colts balls. It is inconceivable. I'm sorry. Obviously, to inflate the Patriots balls back to the legal level. It is inconceivable that they would have switched gauges and no one would have noticed it unless they put them down. So the net effect of all of this is I would give 10-1 odds that what happened at halftime was that the Patriots balls were measured, found to be below the legal minimum as they should have been. Then they were reinflated, which was the highest priority. They were running out of time. They started measuring the Colts balls. They only got through four. They saw that the half was about to begin. In fact, it was a minute late. And they quickly said, okay, we'll cut it off at there, and they left it, and they started the game again. And if that's the sequence, which it almost certainly was, then the third and last statement, that science cannot explain the greater drop of the Patriots' balls compared to the Colts' balls, is absolutely false. Science can fully explain it. It's explained by the colder temperature at which the Patriots' balls were measured. They were measured first, and it's explained by the interval of time during which the Colts' balls were warming up and the pressure was rising. So the report is based on three essential statements, one of which is completely irrelevant and fully expected, the other of which is almost certainly false, or at least contrary to the preponderant probability, which is that the ref remembered which gauge he used, and the third is almost certainly false. And that's the basis of the report.
Back on Downtown, let's continue our conversation with New York Law School Professor Robert Blecker as we talk about Deflategate. Well, you've told us that the science is greatly flawed, but even if we accepted that, Robert, then the next step is when the league said there is a general awareness that Tom Brady had, but you have told us that the general awareness standard doesn't exist, nor has there been any previous penalty in the league for failure to cooperate with an investigation.
That's both of which are correct, nor has there been a suspension on the basis of equipment tampering, so that even if he did it, there was no basis for it. That is, he didn't do it, but even if he was, quote, generally aware. Yeah, that's not a defined culpable mental state. It exists nowhere. The process, I mean, right, leaving aside the guilt or innocence, the process was flawed from start to finish. Don't forget, by the way, the NFL released figures immediately after the game that all of the Patriots' balls had been measured and found that their PSI had dropped by at least 2 pounds per square inch. That statement was absolutely false. Only one Patriots ball was measured at a drop of 2 pounds per square inch. All the rest were much less than that. 8 out of the 11 were exactly within the expected range of the ideal gas law. One was only slightly below it. But the Patriots, confronted with this released information, didn't know how to respond to it in the press conference immediately following the game or a day or so afterwards. Belichick, in his usual surly manner, said, I can't explain it. I've told you everything I know. I can't explain it. I can't explain it. Brady said, I can't explain it. I can't explain the drop. And the reason they couldn't explain it is because it wasn't to be explained. So they didn't release, and they knew the true figures. The league knew the true figures. The Patriots asked for the confirmation of the figures. They delayed it 7 weeks before they gave it to the Patriots, the actual figures, and they only gave them the actual figures on condition that they not release them and make them public until after the Wells report had come out. Why not? Why didn't they want to correct the error? I'll tell you why, because they wanted to control the dialogue. So the process started out unfair, and it continued to be unfair. If you remember, the commissioner not only sat as the original judge and decided to suspend Brady for four games, he then sat as the appellate judge while one of the partners and named people on the Wells report acted as the prosecutor for Brady. So he was not only judge and jury in the appeal, but his prosecutor was supposedly also his outside investigator and also his lawyer. It was an infected process, an unfair one. And by the way, there's something else that's unfair about this whole thing, too, to Brady and the Patriots, which is, I know that the lawyer Kessler is being credited because the judge has reversed the suspension. For now, he's being credited as having done a great job, and he did insofar as he represented the interests of the NFL Players Association. And those interests overlap with Brady's, but they're not identical. The two flaws that I pointed out, the last two flaws in the Wells investigation, drops out of the appellate process and it drops out of the argument before the federal judge. They didn't talk about the sequence. They didn't talk about innocence. What they talked about was the unfairness of the process. What they talked about are the things that you mentioned, that there is no culpable mental state of being generally aware, that the integrity of the game policy was never applied to players, and that's ironic and unfortunate. Mm. So they attacked the process. They attacked the power of the commissioner. And what has been left out of account, really, or at least inadequately taken account of, is the probable innocence of Brady, that he was not generally aware of a conspiracy to deflate, because most probably, A, there was no conspiracy to deflate, and B, there was no deflation.
So you would say, then, to use the parlance of the National Football League investigation, is it more probable than not that absolutely nothing happened?
Yes, that's very good. That's right. And that's one of the changes that I hope comes out of this. I mean, I hope several changes come out of this whole thing. For one thing, Wells himself testified in the appeal when he explained the different burdens of persuasion. You know, you bring up more probable than not. Look, the players agreed to that. In my view, wrongly, they were too focused on safety. Well, focused on safety is a good idea, but they were also focused on money. And they gave up too much in the collective bargaining agreement as to the adjudication of fault and punishment. It's the wrong burden of persuasion. Wells himself testified that in fraud cases in the law, you use something called clear and convincing evidence, which is midway between a preponderance of the evidence and proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Before we label somebody a cheater officially and punish him as such, there should be a burden of persuasion that's higher than a preponderance. It should be clear and convincing evidence. And there should be a presumption of innocence that should attach. And there should be an independent outside investigation. But the integrity of the game policies should apply to the players. So I would hope that there would be a revision of the process. But this thing is not over. I mean, you know, people, the Patriots fans, are rejoicing and assuming it's over because a federal court reversed the suspension. But it's on appeal before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. And arbitration agreements carry enormous presumptions of validity with them. And a judge is only entitled to reverse the arbitration, the result of the arbitration, when the conditions are extraordinary and they go below the minimum possible level of due process. And this presumption of validity might well, I think there's almost an even chance that the Second Circuit Court of Appeals will reverse this and reinstate it. And apparently the league thinks so too. So this may well not be over. And what's unfortunate, in my view, is that they are most likely to sustain it, the lower court, and not reverse it if they believe that it never happened. But that's dropped out of the argument largely once again because the lawyer is supposedly representing Brady is representing the National Football Players Association, and Brady's innocence doesn't matter to them as much as the process matters and the power of the commissioner matters.
Fascinating conversation. We're talking with Robert Blecker, professor of criminal law and constitutional law, and now Deflategate at New York Law School. Robert, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. We really appreciate it. And even though you're not a Patriots fan, keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me.